Welcome to KABU, Emmeline Friedman.
Thank you for having me.
There's been a long-standing debate among social theorists over how technology shape mental and social life and even modify human nature itself. Your own research, including your new book on the concept of internet addiction, takes up some of these very debates. Social anxieties over the transformative power of digital technologies take center stage in The Social Dilemma, a new documentary film directed by Jeff Orlowski. So, Emmeline Friedman, it's great to have you here to help us unpack this film. How would you describe the documentary's framing of the dilemma that it takes up and attempts to explain?
Yeah, so the framing of the problem is kind of at question itself in the documentary, as you see this cast of obvious experts in the field kind of struggle and really grapple with how they would describe the dilemma. So you see these,
and they have a certain authority as both former insiders who are now outsiders who've been through this, and it grants them a particular expertise.
Certainly. Or authority. Yeah. So you have these insiders who are basically claiming, you know, that we thought we were coming in and doing great things for the world, and now we are not so sure. So basically, we invented this thing that's kind of, it's having these damning effects on society at large, and we're really sorry, and we want to kind of figure out what it is we've done. So the dilemma is first a dilemma of these tech rock stars' sort of guilty conscience, and then secondarily a question of the conditioning of other human beings.
So the narrative structure draws on some conventions that are familiar to us in terms of innocence lost or the unleashing of a Frankenstein kind of horror that started out in the laboratories of science and then unleashed unanticipated effects. So we're familiar with some of these aspects of horror films, as well as the innocent scientists who then generate effects beyond their own understanding. So what is old and what is new in this particular critique and dilemma around technology?
Yeah, so as I think you kind of started to point out, this dilemma of technology as a pharmacon, right, of both poison and cure or blessing and curse, is sort of, you know, it's embedded in this, in a Promethean myth. So it's basically as old as fire, really. But there have been particularly loud moral panics, I think, around information technologies, right? Starting from literacy, even, because of the way that, you know, literacy and then the printing press sort of threatened the asymmetrical organization of power in society, right? Whereas communication technologies, where social media sort of blends information and communication technologies, tend to have more overt roots in war and in military power. So, but if you look more recently to moral panics around television, for example, what might be considered new in social media is how to understand two-way media or all-to-all media, right? And the experts point this out in the film, that what might be new here is the fact that there is a personalization involved with these technologies, where they're not only catering the information and the communications you receive to your particular history of using the application or the software, but it also just elicits your participation in a more general way, right? Like it beeps at you, whereas other tools may take a more passive relationship, may yield to human agency more readily.
In your book, you draw on this concept of the fetishizing of technology that psychoanalytic and Marxist cultural theorists draw through different theoretical routes, but kind of enlist this term that the technology itself acquires a kind of magical powers that obscures the human relations behind it or the process of production behind it, and it acquires a power by its object of human projections. The film takes up some of that idea, that in trying to demystify or expose the human relations behind particularly social media. Would you make use of that concept in analyzing the film? Does the film, in that sense, fetishize the technology it attempts to demystify?
You know, it certainly seems to overstate its case at times. And I think this owes a lot to the framing, right, where the experts have to sort of rest on the fact that they really have succeeded in kind of overtaking society in a particular way. So in the film, you see dramatizations, actually, of these sort of almighty, mystifyingly powerful algorithms, right, the mechanism is having actors come and give voice to these algorithms that are saying, oh, you know what will really make Jimmy pay attention? You know, we'll show him this these images of of military power overseas, or will rustle his feathers by showing him images of his crush dating another boy or something like that. So you really see these algorithms as these sort of cunning agents that know you better than you know yourself in a lot of ways. You know, and this is
anthropomorphizes in a very concrete way these algorithms, these networks of massive computers hooked up with each other. So what's problematic about that, would you say? That because humans do tend to personify or anthropomorphize to understand processes that are very abstract and difficult to access. So what's problematic about that?
Yeah, I guess what's a little strange in it to me, well, there are two things. The first is that it sort of passes the buck, in my opinion, right? Like there's this assumption amongst the experts who have the most knowledge about how these technologies actually function, that the algorithms sort of have a mind of their own, right? And certainly if they're being presented as other people with intentions and sort of with their own agency, it bolsters this idea that in fact, these algorithms maybe do have their own intentions and they're all powerful. When in fact, any of the folks talking about this should know, right, that it is very much a question of human and of social decision making, right, to simply pull the plug on these algorithms. So there is a passage of responsibility there. And then another thing that's strange is that, you know, the human, the user, as it's typically called in tech circles, becomes so passive and so very reduced to, you know, kind of a lifeless consumer animated by these targeted ploys to, you know, to rouse them. And so to see more personification of a computer system than of the sort of average everyday user is also another striking part of the film.
And this takes us into the mental health claims in the film and the use of the addiction model as part of that moral panic. And that's been around a long time. I remember the 80s as a psychologist being on panels to speak about parental worry and concern about kids becoming zombified by video games, and citing literature that actually kids who use these video games are not more violent than others, that there is not a direct causal relationship between these technologies and social behavior, and that there is a lot in human experience and in developmental processes that push back on that, that kids will, as Mark said, are both made by their history and technologies, and also remake them or use them for their own purposes. So right. What would you say about the mental health claims that are really at the center of the the urgency conveyed in this film.
Yeah, well, I'll just comment first and say that it's so, you're so right to point out the, you know, that all these moral panics sort of issue from humans' power to affect humans, right? where we create something and then it recursively molds us and then we build another thing and it happens again.
And often the anxiety centers on youth. There's a long history, and here too, it's about teenagers who are escape the control of their parents and
right.
become secret addicts to these and victims of these technologies. And so there's a very much a response to middle class, particularly middle class anxieties about kids. Youth coming under these malevolent forces beyond their control.
Yeah, yeah. So to your question about the mental health claims made in the film, you know, in researching this book on internet addiction, what really hit me on the head was that there has essentially been no psychological research, in my opinion, that has successfully operationalized a notion of social media. Or algorithms, or the internet itself, right? So there's this sort of endemic issue where, it, you know, not only is it incredibly difficult to conceptualize these wieldy social, you know, these notions for the purpose of studying them, but then there's also the problem of not really having a control group of participants who haven't been touched in some way. By social media and by digital technologies, right?
So it's a global addiction they're diagnosing.
Right. So you'd think that if you can't find individuals who haven't been touched by digital technologies, then you would, you know, stop trying to answer the problem in a way that, you know, that targets examples of excess at the individual level. But, you know, to answer this, these studies tend to look at the measure of time spent on social media. And the film does this too, right? It's a question of how much time you spend in front of a screen. But the problem with that being that, you know, the way that time is actually spent on these platforms is never qualified, right? So the claims can only sort of make a point about what isn't happening, you know, when one is on the screen.
In your book, you pursue this line of argument in the context of advanced capitalism and how value is measured in terms of time that departs from useful activity, productive activity. And there seems to be that premise underlying the film itself, just anything that people are doing that departs from their productivity. And yet paradoxically, so much of current productivity is through the internet. So it's kind of a strange claim. This one designer confesses that he's addicted to his internet. I thought that was quite laughable.
Yeah.
So the writer is addicted to their typewriter.
But. Right, right. You know, so looking at the recommendations toward the end of the film, you know, I'm looking at some of these. They're like, don't let children really use and explore computers until they're in high school. You know, avoid this amount of time spent. And I keep thinking about them. And, you know, if my parents, right, I'm a sort of mid-age millennial, if my folks had taken those recommendations seriously, I think I would be at a serious disadvantage in the workforce today.
Okay, so there you have it. We need to reframe the social dilemma, and if nothing else, the film does provide a context for taking up the questions that it both addresses and simultaneously, I think you're saying, obscures. Thanks for being with us today, Emmeline Friedman, to talk about The Social Dilemma, the new film by Jeff Orlowski that's available on many, many platforms online.
Thank you very much, Jan. It's great to be here.